On this episode of Not Normal.
I mean, I want that job where you work for psychology researchers and get to write fictitious stories about knights burning women at the stake. It's the venture project. What do you expect, man?
I enjoy that half of this podcast is talking about the paranormal and half of this podcast is talking about how to monetize it.
The physical world is not fixed.
We don't know what we don't know when it comes to the paranormal.
Hello?
Lisa, I'm not afraid of ghosts.
I'm so scared.
Paranormal, is that what they're calling your kind these days?
Well, I mean, let's face it. You're not exactly normal, are you?
I myself am strange and unusual.
It's not exactly a normal world, is it?
They're here.
Envision Podcasting, in association with The Venture Project, presents Not Normal.
It's showtime.
Hey, welcome to Not Normal, the only paranormal podcast that doesn't have a standard slogan.
Paranormal is an understatement, too.
That's right. I'm Randy Strew. With me, as always,
AJ Armstrong.
And today is a very special day. I'm so excited. We're going to be talking about finally, we've alluded to it a number of times. We are finally going to be talking about the Philip experiment.
The Philip experiment. Yes. Yes. The fictional ghost. Or that's, is it?
That's right. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. But yes, in 1972, a group of Canadian researchers sit around a table and begin to communicate with a spirit who calls himself Philip. Now, the spirit responds to questions by rapping on a table, eventually even moving the table itself, dimming lights and other psychical phenomenon. Now, the difference between this 1972 gathering and other seances is, of course, that Philip, a 17th century English knight, never existed.
Mm.
Yes. As we
Seems like a running theme on our podcast.
That's right. Things that don't exist. We'll just rename the podcast.
It should be just called Debunked.
Debunked. Things that don't exist at all. The experiment began with the Dr. A.R. George Owen for the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, who hypothesized that under certain conditions, in this case, matching more or less the conditions of a Victorian seance, a group of people could create and communicate with an entity, producing the same results as those claimed to be experienced in such seances. Now, the way Dr. Owen worded this particular theory was that ghosts have an objective reality, but they are created out of the minds of those who see them.
Mm.
Yes. So that's Dr. Owens's theory. That's what he wants to test.
That's the hypothesis here.
That's the hypothesis. The group, which became known as the Owen Group, consisted of Dr. Owens's wife, who was a former chairperson of Mensa, as well as an industrial designer, an accountant, a housewife, a bookkeeper, and a sociology student. All people who claimed to believe in the paranormal, but who did not claim to have any psychic powers.
Okay.
Also, psychologist Dr. Joel Witten also attended a lot of the sessions as an observer, which I feel like as an experiment, he probably should have been there for all of them, but we'll get to that in a minute. Now, the group began by creating Philip. They worked out his biography, filling it with romance and tragedy until they knew enough about Philip Aylesford to be able to work up a profile. Now, this is what they came up with. Philip was an aristocratic Englishman living in the middle 1600s at the time of Oliver Cromwell. He had been a supporter of the king and was a Catholic. He was married to a beautiful but cold and frigid wife, Dorothea, the daughter of a neighboring nobleman. One day, when out riding on the boundaries of his estates, Philip came across the gypsy encampment and saw there a beautiful, dark-eyed, raven-haired gypsy girl, Margot, and fell instantly in love with her. He brought her back secretly to live in the gatehouse near the stables of Diddington Manor, his family home. For some time, he kept his love nest secret, but eventually, Dorothea, realizing he was keeping someone else there, found Margot and accused her of witchcraft and stealing her husband. Philip was too scared of losing his reputation and his possessions to protest at the trial of Margot, and she was convicted of witchcraft and burned at the stake. So Philip's kind of a jerk. Philip was subsequently stricken with remorse that he had not tried to defend Margot and used to pace the battlements of Diddington in despair. Finally, one morning, his body was found at the bottom of the battlements, whence he had cast himself in a fit of agony and remorse.
So all that was just made up.
Yeah, they just made all that up.
I mean, I want that job where you work for psychology researchers and get to write fictitious stories about knights burning women at the stake.
Right. So Philip was kind of a dick.
Yeah, screw that guy. No wonder he's freaking not even real.
Stinking Philip and his not realness.
Yeah, asshole.
So I can say that
because he's not real.
That's right.
So I can insult someone that's not there.
That's or can you?
Or can you? In this world today, Randy, are we able to do that? Can you? Is there any grounds to insult anyone anymore?
The Owen Group even enlisted the artistic talents of one of its members to sketch a portrait of Philip. So once the life and appearance was now firmly established in their minds, they began the second phase of the experiment, which was, of course, contact. Now, the first couple of attempts did really nothing, but then they started dimming the lights and creating a different atmosphere. And once they did that, Philip began answering questions through knocking on the table and eventually even moving the table itself. Now, I've got some video of this, and I'm going to try and remember to post it in the show notes. Forgive me if I don't, or somebody email me and yell at me if I don't, or hit me up on the socials and let me know. But we're going to play a little clip of this video of the actual Philip experiment.
Have you brought Dorothea with you? Have you seen Dorothea lately?
No.
No. Would you like to see Dorothea lately?
No.
No.
Didn't you love Dorothea in your time?
All right, I think that's enough of that.
So this is like the Ouija board theory where you move your hands a little bit is how they designed the experiment. Is that it?
Yeah, they're not supposed to move their hands at all, really.
Okay.
The idea is that it's not that they can't move their hands, but they have to leave their hands kind of lightly resting on top of the table.
Yep.
So that in the event that the table moves, it's not one of them, you know, pushing it or pulling it or anything like that. Also, so that they can't make the knocking sounds, because if their hands are above the table, then they're not making the knocking sounds, right?
Sure.
So that was more or less how the experiment went. They had a documentary, they dimmed lights, they have table levitations. So a lot of interesting stuff happened with the Philip experiment. Unfortunately, however, the Philip experiment, as you can probably imagine, gets a lot of criticism. And not only from the skeptics, but from the paranormal community as well. For example, one individual, Rupert Matthews, says a poltergeist will usually claim to be whatever its human observers believe it to be. In his book, Poltergeists and Other Hauntings, that was Rupert Matthews in 2009. So he's coming at it from a member of the paranormal community saying, well, no, you actually did contact the spirit, but the spirit is just going to manifest itself as whatever you want him to be, because why not?
Yeah. So that's a stretch. Well, so how did this experiment end? I guess bring me back to like what I think it's interesting in the video, the table's moving and they're doing this subconsciously as the theory, or what exactly is happening?
Yeah. The theory is that they more or less have created this spirit in their mind
and will it into existence
and
right?
Will it into existence more or less. And this is kind of the problem with the Philip experiment. We're going to get into all of this eventually, but yeah, basically Dr. Owen basically said that a ghost was essentially a hallucination created by those who believed in it. So you get enough people believing in it and you're basically manifesting a hallucination.
Right.
And making it
like a communal reality. Hallucination, like we talked a lot about with our rake episode and
right.
Other things like that. Right.
Yes. In fact, paranormal researcher Amy Bruni in her podcast, Haunted Road, mentioned the Philip experiment when she was talking about a particular haunted location, a hotel, actually. And she was suggesting that some of the hauntings there were not the result of actual people who had died on the grounds or near the grounds or whatever, or even any dead people at all. Now, some she believes are, in fact, spirits of the dead. But there are so many different and differing spirits at this hotel that she's proposing that some of these are actually simply created out of the atmosphere and the feeling of the people going into it and kind of what they bring into it. So they're walking into this hotel knowing that it's a haunted location or believing that it's a haunted location. And instead of actually making any kind of contact with any of the spirits that she claims are actually there, they're actually basically creating something out of their minds through their belief. And that is the experience they're having. And she's using the Philip experiment as sort of the basis for that idea, that hypothesis.
That's interesting. It's almost, I think it's a combination of a lot of different psychological principles, and it's not necessarily a phenomenon in and of itself, right? There's kind of like, there's like this echo chamber aspect of it. There's this confirmation bias aspect of it. You're combining like multiple different psychological factors, I think, into one piece. It brings up a great idea for a business, Randy. I'm just thinking the whole time. We should totally buy a rundown hotel and prime our audience with a ghost story and use the psychology from the Philip experiment to convince our hotel goers that they are being haunted the entire time. And I think that's a fantastic way to take a hotel that will never make money ever and make it profitable.
There you go.
I think we're onto something here.
Now,
it's the venture project. What do you expect, man?
I enjoy that half of this podcast is talking about the paranormal and half of this podcast is talking about how to monetize it.
How to manipulate people into believing that there's a hotel that's haunted. I mean, that wouldn't be hard at all. I mean, you just find, this hotel right here, it's totally a crack house. I mean, oh, sure. I think, and the city's desperate to get rid of it. We make up a story about some guy.
So what you're saying is that the people who are there right now are already seeing ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. It's even better. Even it builds the brand even better, right? They're hallucinating with their LSD strips and things like that all day. So
that's a totally different business model.
Yeah. And think about the future episodes on this, Randy. I mean, using hallucinogenics as like a religious experience and how that interacts with the paranormal. I mean, dude, we could go so far into this, but we digress. But nonetheless, the Philip experiment could be a potential business solution to those of you looking to start a haunted hotel.
Yeah. Now here's the problem with that and with the Philip experiment in general. And yes, there are myriad problems with the Philip experiment. Number one, it's an absurdly sloppy hypothesis.
Yeah. That's kind of my problem the whole time is I don't know if this is testing anything different. It's just combining other psychological principles.
And is it? I mean, that's the thing. How do you control for that?
You saw a ghost, you didn't, right?
Now, granted, they tried to control for it by inventing a ghost named Philip and inventing this whole personality and getting him to answer these questions that they kind of already knew the answers for, right? But how do you control for that? Like, we don't know what we don't know when it comes to the paranormal.
It's like a three-way thing, right? There's you saw a fake ghost, you saw no ghost, and you saw a real ghost. Well, we can't test the real ghost, right?
Right. Well, you can't test a fake ghost.
Right.
You know, I mean, in this case, I mean, if somebody had a projector and we knew that they were creating something, right? Or if we knew that somebody was knocking on a table, you know, that would be one thing, but we don't. So there's really no way of controlling for this experiment. And then when you look at the actual experiment, you know, the actual lab, which is basically the seance, it's essentially chaos. There's not really any sort of controlling over who's talking, when they're talking, what they're doing. You know, they sort of have this agreed upon set of terms, but everybody's kind of talking at once. So like half the time in the video that I showed, they're saying, oh, there was a knock. I can't hear a knock because everybody is too damn busy talking.
Yeah. And I think that's like that kind of like echo chamber groupthink side of it, right? It's just, oh, you heard something, so now I heard something. But I think that's part of what they're trying to test. They're trying to use other people think they heard something. I mean, we've all been there, right? Where you've been in a dark, scary basement and somebody heard something and now you freak out because they freaked out. And I think that's part of what they're trying to pull together. But what would be fascinating to me is if we could get to the point where it's like the Rake, where you are seeing a ghost at the same time as somebody else. Like the follow-on possibilities are incredible.
Well, now the fascinating thing about this is that, you know, as I mentioned, there was dimming of lights, right? Now nobody saw an entity, but they did see dimming of lights, and this is an objective phenomenon. The lights dimmed, right?
So the experimentees noticed the lights dim when they did not in fact dim.
Right. In fact, it's on video.
That's what happened. Yeah.
The knocking. Now, I did hear some knocks during the course of, in the video, we did hear some tapping on the table in response to some of these questions. So there was tapping on the table. Again, there was a physical phenomenon there. So it wasn't just in the minds, but was in fact being manifested out in reality. The problem is that the hypothesis was that through the mind, we can basically manifest our hallucinations into reality. The problem is that this experiment doesn't prove that.
Okay, so that's hard, right? That's exactly what you're getting at.
Yeah.
That let's say the group of five or whatever, 10 people were in the video, that they can manifest something into existence to where someone outside of the group of 5 to 10 people would also find this thing true.
Correct.
Yeah, that's impossible to, yeah, you're right. That's impossible to truly drill down. You could totally do the 10 people all think that they see the same thing, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, group hallucination, mass hysteria. I mean, yeah, right, those are things.
Yeah, every cult leader since the beginning of time has benefited from those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely a thing. But to actually manifest something that physically manifests it such that people who are outside of the experiment are able to observe it, which is what happened here.
Dude, that'd be so kick-ass. Could you imagine, like, you and me and some other dudes get together and we're like, just like some Star Wars shit. We want to drop this thing into the world now and we're going to make it work. And then we just think about it really hard and all of a sudden it comes into existence.
Just some Jedi mind trickery.
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine?
It'd be like, to see their identification.
Like some Doctor Strange thing or something where you start to manipulate matter with the mind. Now there is a big group of people that believe that. And I think it's kind of with that whole like kind of new agey spiritual movement that you can manifest events in life and stuff like that. But there's not a lot of like manifesting physical matter into existence. I mean, dude, that's like a divine, a divine capability you're trying to prove in a psychology experiment.
Well, and there are some limits here. For example, you'll notice, Philip, you never hear a voice, right? You never see anything other than the actual objects moving, things like that. But you don't see an entity, right? In fact, this experiment has been duplicated a number of times. And each time, one famous one is called the Skippy experiment, which took place in Australia. They created a fictitious character named Skippy Cartman, who was a 14-year-old girl who had been murdered by an older man. The group met once a week for 5 months, saw no results, but they started sitting around a three-legged card table and success. They heard a light tapping noise from somewhere inside the table. The second sitting brought results as well. The table began moving on its own, spinning around, balancing on one leg, dragging participants behind it, which again, great physical activity, great physical evidence of something, but
is it Skippy?
Is it Skippy? And again, no, because
this could be some kind of mischievous other spirit that we don't understand messing around as well. Right.
Right.
Like, oh, I'll be Skippy. Ha ha ha. You know? And
yeah, well, that's just it. Yeah. And we've said time and time again, there's nothing. If ghosts exist and if demons exist, There's no like law saying they can't lie, right?
Yeah, I mean, everything would point us to think that they would lie.
I mean, that's
what I always thought
was
funny in those shows where it's like, yeah, we made a deal with the devil. It's like, who's saying that he's going to keep that deal? I mean, this is literally the author of evil. And here we got, you know, you're going to make a deal with this guy hoping the devil gave me his word, man. I mean,
that's right. The devil promised. Yeah. Okay. I'm sure.
But it goes to your point. It's like, who's saying these things? I mean, if they're demonic and they, in many cases, they're probably evil, if not all cases.
And even if they aren't, you know, there's nothing saying it can't lie. You know, that's the big thing with the Ouija board. You know, if you are able to make contact with anything, and we're not saying on this show that you can make contact with something through an Ouija board. Right. And that's kind of the point of the Philip experiment is this sort of mental thing a possible cause for an Ouija board seeming to answer questions, that sort of thing, right? But people who are into this stuff, people who really are part of the paranormal community would say that, well, you know, you use an Ouija board. There's nothing saying that whatever contacts you through the Ouija board is telling you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, so you take an experiment like this. If you do make contact with something and it's just in your mind, that's one thing. But if you do make contact with something and it's not in your mind, there's nothing saying it's not going to screw around with you and pretend it's whatever you want it to be.
Okay. So like we can put the skeptic hat on. Let's put kind of angel's advocate here for a second. So okay. So what are the possibilities now of causing some of the physical phenomena that are observed in the video or in the experiment, right? So the moving of the table, the knocking, the lights dimming, those types of things. There's got to be a couple explanations, right? The first is it's somebody subconsciously might be doing it.
Sure.
Not realize it, right?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, again, with the Ouija board, you have micromotor functions, unconscious, yep, subconscious functions of the hand that makes you move and do things. So yeah, I mean, there's that.
So in the physical reality as we know it, that seems like probably the only plausible reason, right? Now, if you want to get into the supernatural reason, there's kind of the other two possibilities. The one is that there's something you've actually manifested. We did manifest Skippy or Philip. The other is that there is maybe an imposter or a mischievous spirit that's posing.
Right.
Right.
Well, and the other option is that, you know, and we will come back to this again and again, and we have come back to this again and again. And that is that we simply don't understand fully what the human mind is capable of. Right.
Yeah.
We've talked about poltergeists in the past and the theory that some poltergeists sometimes may actually be nothing other than a physical manifestation of mental and emotional trauma. And that's one of the things that I love about that I love about the idea behind this experiment is that it's taking a look at some of these ideas and saying, you know, are we in fact, it's asking the right questions. That's what I like. It's a sloppy ass hypothesis, but it's asking the right questions.
Yeah.
Are we manufacturing these things mentally and through the power of suggestion, through the power of our mind, through some untapped connection that we have between mentality, emotionality, and physicality, turning these things into not full reality, but at least enough to affect our surroundings?
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, we do this on a trivial case all the time, right? If I say Harry Potter, you and me immediately picture the four-eyed friendly wizard that's out there that is a fictional person, does not exist, and it's communally recognized virtually worldwide as a thing, and we all have a picture in our heads. In fact, that was manifested through the art of storytelling and through the art of fiction, which is where, you know, Joseph Campbell tried to go with, you know, kind of his whole, you know, world in philosophy and in theology, is that idea of like where the logos comes from, but that is now manifested an image that's been projected in our minds. What if that went a step further and went outside of our minds into a physical representation? I mean, it's definitely something to think about, right?
Oh, for sure. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because Stephen King actually talks about writing as a form of telepathy.
Yeah, because it is, though. Yeah, it is.
Because, you know, he's saying, I'm going to put an image into your head, you know?
Right.
And he's not wrong. Interestingly, though, what the Philip experiment might show, and I'm using might, because let's be honest, again, sloppy hypothesis, just terrible lab conditions, right? But one thing that it might show, and that things like poltergeist phenomenon might show, is that we're not actually manifesting an entity. We don't have the capability of creating something out of nothing. What we do have potentially is the ability to manipulate our surroundings through our thoughts and emotions.
It's the perception, right?
Well, it's the perception. It's again, call it telekinesis in a sense. Do we have the ability, you know, the knocking, the table moving, all of this, is that kind of a form of collective telekinesis? A collective unconscious telekinesis, right? Where, yeah, we can manipulate what's around us. We can lift objects. We can cause knocks on the wall. We can do all of these different things. Again, the thing that you never, ever hear from these experiments, from the Philip experiment, from the Skippy experiment, and all of the ones that were produced kind of on the tail of this, you never see an entity.
Right.
It's always right. just these physical sort of actions, this manipulation of what's around us.
Well, it's such an ambitious goal, and I appreciate it because it just dabbles with that question that is perception reality or not, right? And that I think is an age old philosophical debate, right? What is reality? And if we can collectively, and this is I think where a lot of people try to dance in the collective conscious space, like if we all don't remember something, did it ever happen? Right. And these are the questions that I think this experiment is attempting to dive into.
Yeah. And again, it's a good idea. And to their credit, I mean, how do you control for some of these things? Right. You go into an experiment like this. Look, everybody has got a bias when it comes to the paranormal. Everybody. Either you believe in the paranormal, you believe in the paranormal to an extent, or you don't believe in the paranormal at all. Everybody has got a bias. And so in a experiment like this, you're going to bring in certain biases, certain assumptions, right? Now, for the guy who created this experiment, Dr. Owen, his bias was basically, look, ghosts don't exist except as we invent them, as we create them with our minds. That's his.
Yeah.
Right. Ghosts are an outward manifestation of an internal hallucination. We can create a collective hallucination and create outward manifestations of that collective hallucination. Right. That was his whole thing. But at the same time, one of the reasons they created Philip specifically, and one of the reasons that they all said, okay, let's create this guy out of whole cloth, was that they also wanted to make sure that they didn't contact any other spirits, which again, I get it, but not a great. How do you prove that? So at least some of the experimenters believe enough in the paranormal to say, okay, well, let's try to make sure that we don't contact something that's actually paranormal. Whereas the experiment was actually designed by somebody who really doesn't believe in the paranormal at all, but thinks it's a function of the mind.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude. Like now, like I'm almost out of words. I'm trying to just process the possibility because I think one of the physical truth that we, at least I think all society kind of grasps, is that you cannot create something from nothing, like no thing, right? Atheist, Christian, everybody gets that. That's kind of this idea of the Big Bang, of all creation. And this is now like, that's what I'm kind of saying. This is almost an attempt at the divine. Can something be created from nothing? Can you create physical matter from absolutely nothing? And that is why it's just crazy to think that that would happen in a psychology experiment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. And again, I mean,
it's almost the only place I think the good atheists can go with where the argument for creation came from, right? Because you go back to the cosmological argument that nothing, that you cannot have something come from nothing. Well, the only way to have that happen is something like this, where through psychology, matter can be created, space can be created, and time.
Yeah.
And now, that gets wild.
Oh yeah, it can be. And now importantly, again, with all of these experiments, with the exception of some theories surrounding the rake, which we dealt with in episode 2, right?
Extensively,
nothing is being created here.
Nothing's physically created.
Nothing is physically being created. What we're seeing is that things are being moved. Things are being, right. And there is a consciousness, but that consciousness may just be a collective consciousness of the group. Because,
yeah, outside of the group, why does the video record noise? You know what I mean?
Well, and again, this is where the manifestation comes from, right? So the group are the ones asking the questions. And in a sense, the theory is, Dr. Owens's theory is, and I tend to, again, I don't like how the experiment ended up. I like his hypothesis. Well, I like his hypothesis as an idea. I don't like it as a hypothesis because it's too widespread and sloppy. But again, to his credit, there's not necessarily a better way to do it.
Yeah. And I think if it just ends at, can the group at least physically hallucinate to do like group hallucination, I think that's true, right? Is we've kind of established that through various experiments, cult leaders, psychology, that group hallucination is a thing. which would explain a lot of ghost stories, probably. Right.
But can it manifest itself in any way outside of the group?
Outside of the group, right.
And
you're right. How the hell do you even do that?
So, and this is the thing. Like, again, in the theory here is that, and this is one of the possibilities for what happened with the Philip experiment. You know, like we said, there are a couple of, you know, we've kind of gone over the different possibilities of what exactly happened with the Philip experiment. The problem is that the hypothesis was so broad and the experimentation was so flawed that it one could not possibly prove the other. So we're left looking at what evidence was there and what it could say. It doesn't prove anything. What it does is it gives us some possibilities. Mm-hmm. So either, as we said, something contacted them that was a spirit and lied to them, or somebody somehow managed to manipulate the reality, which there doesn't seem to be a case for that one, or they in fact proved what Dr. Owen suggested, which was that they were able to come together, create this entity out of whole cloth, and it answered them. So here's the kind of the mechanics of how that would work, right? So this group, I read you their biography of who Philip is. Right. Yep. They all know who Philip is. Now think about their questions. Did you like Dorothea? Did you love your mistress? Right. Now, these are all questions that they know the answers to as a group because they created this character. So the idea is that, okay, they're all asking these questions to which they all know the answers. So because they all know the answers, but subconsciously they're trying to reach out and connect with this invented being. It knows it has the answers that they're giving. So the raps on the table are this sort of manifestation of the answers that they already know. So basically they're saying, you know, did you like your wife? Yes. Two knocks. Okay. There are going to be two knocks now because of this idea that they've manifested and managed to make reality.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically the questions are already answered, which means that the collective answer or the result of that would be even easier for them.
Absolutely. Which is good for the experiment, to be honest.
Yeah. Gosh, what gets me though is how would this ever get outside of the group?
Like, well, and that again is where we look.
It would have to be supernatural.
Well, not necessarily supernatural. That again is where we look at things like some poltergeist phenomenon, telekinesis. Now we think of telekinesis.
That could be a whole episode.
Absolutely. Now here's the thing. We think of telekinesis as we're sort of trained to think of telekinesis as something supernatural.
As Carrie from, you know, Stephen King novel. Right.
But in fact, if telekinesis is a thing that can happen, it's not supernatural. It's merely a function of our minds and its sort of untapped ability to manipulate our surroundings. That's actually not supernatural at all. It's paranormal in the sense that it's
unusual.
Unusual. It's not something that we normally would see, but it's not actually supernatural. So if this group of people who are asking questions to which they already know the answers are somehow able to make it manifest and answer those questions, that's not actually supernatural at all. And that was kind of the Dr. Owens's point, is that it's not supernatural. It's just, this is a function of our minds that we really aren't aware of as a society yet.
What like follow-on work has happened that you're aware of?
Again, some other experiments, and mostly people attempting to set up similar scenarios and trying it for themselves. Basically, there have been a few of those, and some of them have worked, some of them have not. The problem is that both the hypothesis and the experiment were so broad, in a sense. I'm not sure we know yet where to begin following up. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, you can go a lot of different ways with it, right?
Because the problem is, again, when it comes to the supernatural, the whole idea of supernatural is we don't know what we don't know. So how do you control for something that you don't know?
I think the problem is, at least at the fundamental aspect, is that we right now have a barrier between physical matter and how, and when we believe that there physical matter exists and we are observing it and interpreting it, right?
Right.
And I think what this experiment's trying to do is it's trying to show that it could be the opposite or a fluid between the two in a lot of ways, right? That like the reason in one way of kind of like explaining this is I read that in some cases, very severe schizophrenic people can trap themselves in a maze that does not exist, that they physically feel. They run and hit their head against it, their head will start to bruise and they will actually start to like feel that they are inside of a maze and not be able to get out.
Mimes in the world is what you're saying.
What's that?
I said, so that the best mimes in the world is.
Oh, that'd be wild. I mean, but like, but that's crazy to think that like you could, that reality is so true to you that you're actually starting to feel physical matter. Now it starts to make you think of, well, what if that's how this all is, right? Where I'm feeling this table or this chair or this desk. And the reason I'm feeling it is because I've told myself to feel it this way.
Right.
And it goes back to being an infant when you come into the world and you just, you really know nothing. And you're just, now you're just, everything's a heuristic. And it's like, oh, this is a this and that is a that. And you're starting to tell yourself what these things are. And you're just already feeling something that, you know what I mean? It's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg here? I think that's the bigger philosophical dilemma that's going on in this experiment, which is why I think it's just so unbelievably ambitious to try to attack that.
It is. What I think, and this is just me, right? What I think is the next step here is removing spirits, removing communication from the equation. And honestly, this is what I think should have been the first step. But so you've got these different possibilities based on the Philip experiment, right? One of these possibilities is that essentially there's a type of telekinesis happening, a type of subconscious, unconscious telekinesis happening, right? So I think that the next step has got to be, okay, let's take spirit communication, quote unquote, out of the equation entirely. Let's focus on telekinesis. Let's focus on this aspect of, okay, can we, in fact, manipulate our surroundings with our minds? That, I think, is an experiment that we could potentially undertake.
I think there's something to that because, like I said, I think it, like to the Stephen King analogy or the Harry Potter analogy, these things already happen that you do that. This group collective thought that you're already...
But can
you
manifest it into reality?
But it can, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of a good way to put it where... You're not necessarily.
Let me put it this way.
If you can get rid of the assumption that physical matter is fixed,
right?
And it's not fixed, that instead it's the opposite. It's that what we interpret is that we're not interpreting physical matter and observing it like we're thought that we think happens, but instead that physical matter is a result of our brains developing their own heuristics to explain stuff that's in our mind, that everything is just a mind game, right? Think of it that way.
Was that Aristotle?
That I am just
with that idea?
I think, I mean, I'm sure there's tons of people that came up with that idea, but I think there's that's that idea. Is that, so if that is true, then it wouldn't be hard at all. You just got to convince enough people that this thing is a that, and then all of a sudden, we're doing this in the world all the time with other stuff and kind of more small examples. Ad hominem fallacies and things like that, where we hate a person that we don't even know because we've been primed to think. I mean, so I'm thinking like there's pieces of this that are already happening in the world that would make me wonder if it is possible. I think you have to, if you can go into it, assuming that the experiment is that the physical world is not fixed, that the physical world is instead
the opposite.
I disagree.
I think that that to me is dangerous for a scientific experiment, right? Because that's a huge, huge unknown bias, and it's begging the question. Number one,
but it all is in that.
If you walk into an experiment without
you can have like things like math are consistent that don't have a beginning.
Well, right, they're consistent. Right? What I'm saying is that if you walk into an experiment just making that assumption, that to me is dangerous. Remove assumptions. Get rid of assumptions. Walk into an experiment with, okay, a group of objects, right? Take somebody who claims to be able to move these objects, to manipulate these objects with their mind, okay?
Yep.
Design an experiment around, can this person who claims to have this ability actually do these things? And then work on experiments. Can people who are not who do not claim to have this ability, can they be trained to do these things?
Have there been other studies with telekinesis that have replicated?
There have been, but it's so many of them. Again, the experimentation has been sloppy. The hypotheses weren't great to begin with in some cases. And so they're sort of inconclusive. You know, we've got people who say, oh, here's a spoon, watch me bend it, you know, whatever. But it's been inconclusive. And I think that we haven't really done enough experimenting to really get conclusive, because to me, what would be the sort of steps here to prove Dr. Owen's theory, right? First, prove that telekinesis is possible for one person. Then prove that it's possible for somebody who does not claim to be telekinetic can in some way subconsciously manifest this sort of ability. Third, prove that this can happen on a collective basis.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where the disconnect between that's one reason the disconnect, I think, is why you and me are talking past each other. The first one is the telekinesis side in the purest form is the ability to manipulate physical matter with the mind.
Right.
Now, the jumping the gun to why does that work is kind of where I've gone, where it's like, now we need to figure out, okay, is there physical energy that's coming through the mind? Like, is there some kind of magnetic field, you know, if you will, that's coming out of my brain that can lift things, or is our presuppositions of reality incorrect to where we are not necessarily, there's no barrier between physical matter or not? I think that's the problem. So then it goes back to, I mean, and this is where these postmodernists today are.
Well, that's
going,
the problem with using, you know, that as an experiment, though, is that idea really,
well, it removes existential, or not existentialism.
It adds existentialism.
Yeah, right. But it would remove any type of empiricism at all, right? Any empirical data, everything would be gone, which is where the postmodernists are living right now, where they are there. There is no physical reality. Nothing is real. Everything is an interpretation. So a postmodernist, to prove their philosophy, would have to go into this kind of experiment.
Well, the problem is there's nothing, there's not really an experiment.
You can't experiment because there's no science, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's, well, and not only that, but you can't prove it. How can you prove that
you can't, there'd be,
what
be
is around us doesn't
truth,
exist.
There would be no reality.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, I think, but that's a problem with postmodernism in general. It's like, how can this be true if there's no truth? Right.
You know? Right. But what we can do is prove whether or not, for whatever reason, we can manifest these abilities.
Mm-hmm. And then you'd have to figure out the reason.
And then you can figure out the reason from there. And, you know, because we live in a scientific age, we could probably,
that is dwindling.
We could probably do that in a sense of, you know, is there something that has to do with magnetism, with, you know, physical magnetism, the electric energy,
right,
of the brain affecting the magnetic reality, you know, there are,
and is there unknown energy that we're not tracking, right? You know, that's, we didn't know that magnets or electricity or any of these things existed for centuries.
Well, that's it. I mean, there are things within the realm of science and maybe just beyond the realm of science,
right?
That we could do. I mean, and yeah, absolutely. I mean, magnets, some of the things that we now know of as science, I mean, this was stuff that would get you burned at the stake.
Right.
Back in Philip Aylesford's time,
not only 200, 300 years ago, you know, that exactly. And I think that's, so I think that you're right. I mean, to take this to a logical, to jump between an ontological discussion, right? But taking a step back to, okay, what is there? There's the ontological and metaphysical side of this. Well, how do we bring this to the physical discussion first? Can this even be done? Right.
Right.
Step question one, can things really be moved with the mind? Can people do that? And can we document it in an experiment that's consistent and systematic? If the answer of that is yes, then yeah, I think that opens the door to a lot of questions. How is this happening? Is this something that's happening within the physical space that's undiscovered? And that's what we're looking at. Is this a new type of magnetic, or is it using physical energy that we all know and use, but people can channel it differently depending on their body and their situation, their mind, like a superhero, for example,
right?
You know, like I can use electricity to do something that normal person would die from. I don't know. And then the other, but, or does that move into the more philosophical discussion of like, well, or are we looking at this wrong, that people are able to move between, that we don't understand physical matter the way we thought. This is really just a box with some rules that lives within a more chaotic box that does not follow rules. And that's another issue.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Like Newtonian physics worked for so long. We discover relativity and all of a sudden all of physics is different. But that Newtonian physics box worked for so long until we get to relativity.
And to an extent, it still, I mean, it still does. I mean,
still does.
Gravity is still a thing, right? Yeah. You know, so what a lot of the science is doing is not necessarily negating other sciences, adding to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing, like with the theory of relativity, you know, relativity doesn't negate necessarily Newtonian physics, but it does add to it. It does add to what we know about it. Because what you have with classical mechanics, as we know it, right, is this is the reality based on the set of circumstances that we understand and know about right now.
Yes, yes, exactly. Just like when electricity was discovered, we learned a whole new theory of physical energy that can be used and that works differently. And we figured that out in 50, 60 years.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when did we figure out that light, for example, is energy and in fact can, you know, it in fact has mass, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, when did we figure that out? That changed our understanding of science. When did we figure out that sound travels in waves? That changed our understanding of science.
Right. Yeah. So I think that you're definitely probably right. There is something there, but we first need to figure out, is this possible? Yes or no? The second question is, if yes,
then how,
why?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the experiments like the Philip experiment are good and useful in the sense that they make us ask these questions.
Right.
What the Philip experiment does not do is answer any of these questions.
Right. Exactly.
It certainly doesn't prove Dr. Owens's hypothesis because there are too many variables. Again, we don't know what we don't know.
Right. Right. And I think you're exactly right. So I think that the benefit is that I think we can all agree that there is some type of universal or a group hallucination that can happen, which might explain a lot of paranormal encounters, or like we saw on Reddit with the rake, this can happen through social media in a lot of ways to make the group larger than it might be organically.
Right.
Which,
and again, possible. With the rake, it's very important to note that, I mean, there has been no solid evidence that this thing ever existed or ever will.
Oh, we debunked the crap out of the rake. Yeah.
You know, and this gets us to, and we're running out of time here. So I don't necessarily want to open the discussion too much because number one, I'm about to piss off a lot of people.
That's exactly what we need to do when we start a podcast.
That's right. We need to be willing to accept the fact that as long as we don't know what we don't know, that as long as as experiments like the Philip experiment end up asking more questions than providing answers, paranormal science doesn't actually exist.
Wow.
Paranormal studies are at best, and can only be at best, a pseudoscience. Now, I'm not saying that means it's not worthwhile. I'm not saying that means it's not something that people should be looking into. I'm looking into it. We're looking into it. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that we need to recognize the limits of what we know.
Right.
And we need to recognize that until we can answer those questions, which, by the way, some of them we will never be able to answer. The paranormal research is at best a pseudoscience.
Yeah, but you're challenging the community to say, if this is true, we need to pull it into the scientific realm to ground it and to make it legit. Because so it should be more encouraging, I think, to people. Because this is now, if you think there is something out there, gather evidence, make it systemic, and see if we can replicate and follow the scientific method, which would allow it to be a real science. But by the very nature of paranormal, something is normal, it's been replicated systematic. So I think the goal is to say, how do we take something paranormal, make it normal, right, and slowly and slowly close that gap of what we don't understand?
Yeah. Well, and that's my big, you know, and I've said it on social media. I've said it on the podcast. You know, we have these, you know, I've got scientific proof that a ghost exists. No, you don't. Scientific proof that a ghost exists has never once happened. It does not exist. And again, this is where I'm going to piss people off, because it doesn't exist. You can prove that something happened, but what happened? You can't prove that it was paranormal. You can't prove that it was a ghost or a demon or whatever else. You can't prove it.
Right. It has to be an experiment. It has to be an experiment where we can test over and over again before something can be scientific. People forget that's what science is. Science is just something that followed a process called the scientific method, which is we have a hypothesis, we test against it, we gather results, and we do this over time until we get reliable clumps of data that say this is an area that we think is true. That's it. Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's
in the world, if the world could just remember that, then we don't have to debate what science is anymore.
That's right. We're going to talk about this a lot. We've got an episode coming up soon on spirit communication. We've talked a little bit about it in the past, but we're going to talk more about it, because that's one of the things that drives me absolutely insane, is that we think we've got these sort of scientific means of communicating with spirits and we simply don't. And we're going to get into that in some of,
and then we're going to monetize it when we figure it out, of how we can use the science to communicate with spirits. And the venture project will be a equity stake in it. And we'll make sure that all of us will make sure we use venture project branded gear. Hey, next episode, Randy, I think we should definitely talk about the 20 theologians that were hired by NASA look into UFOs to see what the impact's going to be on people's faith.
You know, that's a great idea. Let's talk about that next time. Till then, thanks once again for joining us. We, as always, hopefully leave you with more questions than answers, and we'll have more of those for you next time. It's Not Normal. I'm Randy Strew.
And I'm AJ Armstrong.
Have a great night.
Not Normal was recorded at the Venture Project by AJ Armstrong and edited by Randy Strew for Envision Podcasting. Audio clips downloaded courtesy moviesounds.org, and music was from infinitunes.co. Not Normal is copyright to Randy Strew and AJ Armstrong.